Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to Continued Success, your Phillies podcast about the past and present Phillies, as well as various other topics. We don't really like to limit ourselves here. It's 2019. We can talk about whatever we want. I'm Justin Clue. I write for FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus. And with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Justin.
Yay! The NLCS is over.
Let me tell you, it was boring.
That was fast.
That was real fast. No, it was evidence that the Cardinals just should not have been there.
It was, right? I couldn't stop thinking that this was just more. Yeah, it was like, oh, I've never seen a team so decidedly beat the team they needed to get to the NLCS, but still not really look like they deserve to be in the NLCS. Mm-hmm. I mean, that last game of the series, they couldn't have wanted or thought they were going to be there. Like they were not. They were totally checked out.
No, it was like. That's it's pathetic. Like Clerks, the baseball, Clerks, the baseball show. I'm not even supposed to be here today. Like, really, it was a twist of fate that they made it, because they made it just because, you know, Mike Foltynewicz had a really bad day. That's really it. I mean, the Braves had a lot of chances, you know, to go past to the Cardinals, but that was their last chance. And, you know, their one pitcher wasn't up to the task. So it was like a twist of fate. I mean, I don't know how much better or worse it would be, how much better or worse I would feel right now. I'd probably be angrier somehow, which seems impossible.
It does seem impossible.
Looking at the teams left and what's happening, especially with the Yankees just bending over. God, they are. I'm just like, I don't care. Like, I just hate the Astros a whole lot. And so I'm spending a lot of time when we put baseball in the evenings, because it's just what we do, just yelling at the screen at the Yankees to stop it. Just do something.
Show like, a little life.
Exactly. Like, I don't care that much about the Yankees, but they're actually a very interesting and endearing team. Like, Brett Gardner is 36 and having a career year. That is so cool.
Yeah. You know, I first of all, you want to be able to rely on some of these really irritating teams. Like, part of this postseason has been me realizing maybe I just dislike too many teams. But also, you know, there's reasons to dislike so many teams.
Yeah. How can you make yourself stop?
It's sort of it's an aspect of adult fandom, I think, where you're like, I need to address the harsh realities of this situation. In the case of the Yankees, I think that's the last, and I'm realizing this now, that might be the last team I hate just because they're the team they are, in addition to the other things. But, like, there's a very pure hate there. You know, like, oh, yeah. I was born hating the Yankees. I was born in a house that hates the Yankees. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's there's a purity there that I think is kind of beautiful and is the essence of fandom. But, like, you want to be able to rely on these teams that have been so annoying and that have beaten the team you follow so many times, and then the Cardinals roll into the NLCS, and you're like, all right, let's see what the stupid-ass Cardinals have up their sleeves, and they're just like, and you're like, oh, great, thanks for coming, guys. This is awesome. Nice job.
I had positioned myself. I'm like, all right, I could do this. The individual Cardinals are fine. Mike Schilt is an idiot who tried to lose. He tried to lose so many times.
I forgot who the Cardinals manager was.
I did for a while, because when they fired, who the hell was it? Was it Mike Matheny?
Yes.
Then they fired Mike Matheny. Mike Schilt, I believe, was their interim manager. And he did so well for them over, 2 months or so, that they just named him the manager without doing a search or anything.
Yep.
Which is fascinating.
Sounds watching, like the Royals hiring Mike Matheny. It sounds like now. It sounds like the same deal.
I know. So I'm just like watching him and watching him make mistakes, which I'm just screaming at, because just as a baseball fan, I'm like, why are you doing this? why? And he, you know, he managed to to get out of it and make it to the next round somehow, and it just all came crashing down. Especially after that speech, that very that very endearing speech that just now, at, like on the backside, it just looks really embarrassing.
Love that speech, and that's the problem with that speech getting out there. Clearly, it was not meant for fan or consumer ears.
Nope.
And now it got out there, and it didn't offend me. Obviously, it was like, oh man, that's awesome to hear a coach talk like that. The problem is now he's got to win it all, or this we're gonna look back on this and be like, well, you guys totally. And not only did they not win, they really. Really not won. Oh. It really makes that speech like, wow, I wonder who he was talking to in that speech, because it was not the 2019 Cardinals. Mm-hmm. They did not come out and fuck everybody up. They came out and pooed themselves and went home.
Yep. I mean, in the Nationals, you gotta, oh God, the thought of having a World Series winner in our own division the year after Bryce Harper left makes me want to vomit. It makes me want to rage vomit.
Do you want to talk about that? I hesitate to talk about that that narrative to all this. I guess it's unavoidable, but I hesitate because I don't want to give it more life. But it's got plenty of life. It's
we
the
don't
first
have
thing.
To talk about it. Talk about it. I'm just like, I mean, I kind of have to hand it to them because the Nationals really want it. They want it. They want this so bad, and they're either gonna, you know, it's either gonna be a really great series with. You know, with the Astros, let's face it, the Astros are probably winning. It's either going to be a great series with the Astros or the Nationals are going to get skewered.
Yeah.
Those are the only two ways it goes. I don't see them running the table with the Astros just because that's who they are.
It can't happen,
period.
Yeah.
I can't have it.
But at the same time, I'm like, the fact that I'm saying it can't happen will make it happen.
Pretty much.
But it's really difficult. That's why I got to phrase it like, it is difficult to imagine a World Series in which the Nationals just destroy the Astros. This will probably be their most difficult challenge of the season, which is, it's, you know, hilarious that I'm like saying that, like it's a hot take about the World Series, but like it will be like the mm-hmm. Cardinals were not the Nationals' biggest challenge in this season thus far. And it was the National League Championship Series, but they were not. The Brewers were probably a bigger challenge, not just because of the team they are, but because they only had the one game context to beat them. So This will be the most formidable opponent, assuming it's the Astros, that the Nationals play. And even if it was the Yankees, I'd say that might still hold true, to be honest. Like the American League teams and these two American League teams seem to be playing on a higher level than a lot of these National League teams this year. Now I don't want to say that like completely eliminating the Nationals. Their pitching has been, and I've written about this multiple times this postseason, not only has their pitching been exactly the kind of pitching they acquired it to be for the postseason, but they also just have, like, whatever that thing is that happens to a playoff team that just, like, pushes them through the postseason, they have it this year. The Nationals grabbed that football, and they're just running with it. Mm-hmm. And like, that's I don't want to say owed to them, but it makes sense. Like the Wheel of Fortune spun around and it's their turn to have that. Cause that's always an X factor. That comes from like a Mike Schilt kind of speech. And you can still give that speech and not have that mojo clearly, as the Cardinals did not, but the Nationals, this is their year for that. And it'll be interesting to see how that fares against a team that is, I think, like comprehensively probably better than the Nationals. I mean, would you agree
100%.
With that?
100%. I think they are comprehensively better. I think their pitching is close, you know, Verlander.
Yeah, there'll be great pitching matchups.
Yeah. Verlander and Cole with, Scherzer and Strasburg. I'm there for that, actually, because I love good pitching, and I haven't been able to hate either of those. Like, I hate Max Scherzer, but I also think I kind of love him. It's very weird.
Yeah, I saw that. You're struggling with
I'm really, because I really just, I get a vibe from him I don't like. I think he's aggressive and weird with the media, and in just, like, I've seen posts of his on social media. I do not like his vibe. But I see him like he's just full of nervous energy in the dugout. He's so excited. And you have to, it's like, I'm trying to think of another pitcher like it where you have to like physically restrain him from jumping into a game. Like you have to, like, he said, I think at the end of the, what was it, the Dodgers series, like, he, I'm done, I'm not taking the ball again, you know, doesn't mm-hmm. matter, you know, but he went to the bullpen in game five. And it might have just been because Davey Martinez wanted to get him out of the dugout because he really, he's pacing. He's just like constantly, woo, you know, and like slapping five with everybody all the time. Like you, they put the camera on in there and I'm just like, he's got to be intolerable. But I also, it's also very endearing.
That makes sense. Yeah. You know?
There's the hugging. The Steven Strasburg has said, I am not a hugger. And yet, like Gerardo Parra and like a couple other dudes, when he comes in from an inning or at the end of an outing, they will wrap him in a hug for like a good 2 minutes and you could tell he hates it. It's really, it's all very, like, this is a team that I could get behind if they weren't who they are, because I can't.
That's a huge problem. I was going to talk about that this postseason, is that there's so many players wearing so much laundry I hate. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't stand it. But, like, there's all these players that I really like. And I'm trying to address that. And I don't want to root for them. Because at the end of the day, yeah, you still got that. Like, really, it comes down to if the narrative of, oh, we had to dump Bryce Harper to win. If that narrative if that narrative didn't exist, I think it would be a lot easier to like root for Nationals fans. But like there's just a you know, pomposity, and I called it brattiness on Hitting Season. I think that's still accurate. That just makes it like I can't get in the car with these people. I can't be shoulder to shoulder with these people.
Well, and it's their first time, and yeah, it's gonna be like, listen, Phillies fans are obnoxious the first time.
But I don't think so. No, I think we were pretty rational and on the level.
We didn't go neener neener, Scott Rowland. Like,
didn't we?
I don't remember.
We're gonna review the 2009 NLCS here in a little bit. You'll be surprised at the level of pettiness. We actually sought out ways to be petty that weren't readily apparent.
I'm so excited about this. We are horrible. Here's the thing. All fans are horrible.
Yes.
All fans, when they win, are horrible. They're horrible to other fans. They're horrible to their own fans who are not fans in the way they think. Because, like, there was that annoying, I'll say it, this woman was an annoying bitch, whoever she was, you know, tweeted, like, I don't, you know, Ben, if you just moved to DC and are into the Nationals, fuck you, or whatever it was. And I'm just like, what is the point of this?
That was
like,
weird. Who was that? Oh, I saw her everywhere after that.
Everyone was quote tweeting her stupidity. Yeah,
some anonymous.
I'm gonna guess it's, you know, some weirdo DC badge wearer, you know.
Yes.
I went to college in DC, so I mean it was a million years ago now, but I'm still very familiar with the way they all are. the government workers, the contractors, it's all just a very weird attitude. It's that attitude. And just like when the Phillies, God, if the Phillies ever make it back to the playoffs and they have a good run, I will become the good fan police beating people to death who are just like, get out if you don't like blah blah. Like, no. I want every single Phillies fan who has ever liked or even thought about liking the Phillies to jump on board. I want fans of other teams who hate other teams to jump on board to like the Phillies, because who doesn't want more people cheering? Who doesn't want to share the experience with as many people possible?
Yeah. Like, you don't have to. I mean, I know some people will always be like that, but that's we talked about the Nationals not having a full stadium for playoff games, and how unthinkable that is. Like, regardless of the circumstances, you want everybody you can get. You know, that's what Jimmy Rollins told the fans at the end of the 2010 NLCS. You know, right before they lost it, but they had to come back to Philadelphia because Jason Worth hit that home run in San Francisco, and that prolonged the series. And Jimmy Rollins just told the press, looked right in the camera and just said, like, let them have it. Let them have it. And you just, like, need everybody. You need as many people as you can get. So, like, yeah, that shit's always so funny. And, like, considering that, like, the Nationals, who are the real Nationals fans? Seventh graders? Like, it's a tall order to be like, oh, I want only the most grizzled, hardcore Washington Nationals fans. Like, cool, we'll find some 12-year-olds, I guess, and bring them to the stadium. But they're going to be tired because it's late at night.
I mean, the Nationals have been there since 2005. Like, the true Nationals fans have been fans for 13 years. Like, and granted, that's not a short time, but also DC is a commuter city and a city where very few people are actually from there. A lot of people move to the city to work for the government or work for, you know, related agencies or nonprofits. So DC gets new people all the time, especially from foreign countries coming in, like, be welcome. Like, this is the team that they could like. So be welcoming. I mean, that's also on the owners who don't like to keep the metro open late. I'm going to be fascinated to see how much they really don't want to spend money on that for the World Freaking Series.
Yeah, you'd think they would. Maybe this is worthy of an exception, but no.
Open up their Magoo wallet, let the moth fly out of it, and dump it out.
What do you think of the Nationals? I mean, they keep saying, "Oh, this is the Nationals' first big postseason round." Blah blah blah. But people are like, "Well, hello, the Expos played in this divisional series."
No,
it's not right. Like, I realize it's the same organization, but you have to obviously realize this is a different team.
That's
how it is in my head. And that doesn't mean I like the Expos way more than I like the Nationals. I just make that differentiation, not as like a burn on the Expos, but more as like a compliment to them. Like, you guys don't want to be involved with this. Like, you have your own treasured, wonderful legacy. It got stopped short. It'll probably, I think, in some form or another, continue. It's continued very amicably thus far. Like, there's a very big, it feels like there's a more intense Expos following than there was when I was a kid. But of course, I was a child and my view of the world is very limited. But I don't know. I typically separate them and feel like they should be separated, even though there's, you know, a lot of the same, you know, the people moved to Washington, D.C. from Montreal. So it is the same organization. But I don't know. I separate them in my head, and I don't think they deserve to take credit for anything the Expos did. Or, like, why we keep talking about the Senators. Okay, I actually have two questions. Mm-hmm. One is, do you do that too? And two, people keep talking about how, you know, the last Washington World Series or whatever was the Senators in 1933. And, like, it's so good that baseball is back in Washington. Why is it so important for baseball to be in Washington, D.C.? Is it just because it's the nation's capital and it's America's pastime? Because I don't think it's that important that it's there.
Okay, so first question. I do separate the Nationals and the Expos because even though they're technically the same team, the Nationals have spent the 13 years, except for this one, so the first 12 years of their existence, ignoring the Expos completely. Like, literally ignoring them. I don't think they had any Expos stuff hanging up. They did not invite any Expos back to do first pitches. This was it's a franchise that was without a history. Which is, I mean, the Marlins barely have a history, but they don't really need one because no one cares about them. But, like, the Mets, the Phillies, the Braves all have long histories. I mean, the Mets only stretches back to the early 60s.
Yeah.
And they love their history. They're trying to grab other history. You go to Citi Field, there is a Jackie Robinson thing there. Jackie Robinson did not play for the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
And they have that there because he is not associated with the Yankees, and the Mets are kind of as close as you can get to the Brooklyn Dodgers, which is weird. But the Nationals were a team who, without a history intentionally for so long, and this year they started letting a little bit of that Expo stuff back in, but they don't get to claim any of that. And as far as the Senators are now actually the Minnesota Twins. That's who they are. That's who they eventually became when all, you know, the moving and the realignment. So they don't, you could say, yes, but, you know, baseball's back in D.C. for the first time since the 30s. I'm like, the only team that gets to claim anything with the Senators is the Twins. And I don't know that they do or not. You know, I'm a huge Walter Johnson fan. He was with the Senators. He was a longtime pitcher. I love watching videos of his delivery. He's just this big hulking dude who has this very long, graceful, delivery. And he finally won a World Series with the Senators. That's great history and such cool history. It's a big Zimmerman vibe, but it doesn't belong to them. So, right. Like, they've spent so much time ignoring their own history and trying to be their own team. Like, they're almost certainly going to have someone from the Expos come back and do a first pitch.
Oh, yeah. What was that? I was going to ask, who's going to do that? Like, I saw a lot of people saying, the 2000, get some 2005 Nationals. Some of the people from the first Nationals team.
His name is Ryan Zimmerman.
Just have Ryan Zimmerman do it, I guess. I mean, who's from that team that people would, like, want to see? Like, they'll want to see just about anybody at this point because everyone's just very excited about the Nationals right now. Yay. But yeah, that inaugural Nationals team had Brian Schneider, Nick Johnson, Jose Vedro, Christian Guzman. Vinny Castillo was on that team. Marlon Byrd played left field. Brad Wilkerson, Ryan Church. I mean, this is like, I guess, celebrating the beginning of their team, but like also...
No one cared. I lived in D.C. I lived on Connecticut Avenue in actual D.C. proper when the Nationals started, and no one cared. I mean, and actually part of that time I actually lived at GW, which is... you know, blocks away from the White House. Literally no one could have cared. No one cared. I cannot emphasize this enough. My friend Matt and I, you know Matt, he was in my wedding. We talked a lot during that time about why, I mean, we knew why the team was there to get people like us and the older versions of us who like other NL East teams to come to games. No one could have cared. It was a collective yawn, and I thought, how is this team going to survive if no one pays attention? Like, no one cares about that team. There is almost no one interesting on that team besides Ryan Zimmerman, who can't throw out the first pitch. And I mean, maybe he can. I actually think that would be pretty great. Like, only others would be what, Levon Hernandez?
Is Walter Johnson alive? I'm just kidding.
Well,
he's not.
I'm looking at this list from NBC Sports Washington about different, you know, possibilities. They've got Joe Thompson, who's like a longtime Georgetown basketball dude. Gibbs.
What?
Three-time Super Bowl winner. Who cares? Tom Boswell, absolutely fucking not.
Oh my God, no.
Tom Boswell, the columnist, is number three on this list.
This is a very empty cupboard if we're turning to a journalist.
So we've got number four, we've got Alex Ovechkin.
That'd be fine, I guess.
I mean, I'm sure he'd come. I think DC just won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they did. That makes sense. I get that. That's exciting. I'm trying to remember, you know, we talk about the 2009 season on this podcast and in 2008. And I remember one of those seasons, it was a story about a really tragic, a really, really bad police shooting where police were shot. And one of the surviving officers was in the hospital. And actually, the Phillies got him to, when he got released, to come out and throw the first pitch. And that was crazy. I had been following that story and I was at the game. And when they announced his name, I was like, oh my God, that guy's here. Wow. Holy crap. Like that, a moment like that is always that, you know, that was cool. But yeah. you don't always have a tragic, you know, high profile news story to turn to, but I guess in DC you do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Levon Hernandez is number five. It says he threw the first pitch for the Nationals organization at RFK 14 years ago. A fan favorite and a winner, Levo is loved by Nats fans. He should be throwing out the first pitch.
There you go.
The rest of the people on this list are ridiculous. We've got Whale, W-A-L-E, Whale. He was the city's most accomplished musician and proudly supports the Nationals. Wears the curly W just about everywhere he goes. All right. I don't think that one is likelihood slim. Dave Grohl, a native of Northern Virginia.
We're reaching here.
And it says, not sure how much Grohl reps the Nationals. I'm like, well, then why are you putting him on this
list? I was going to say, I wonder if Dave Grohl knows the Nationals are a thing.
Anthony Williams. No, former mayor Anthony Williams. Absolutely what? Fucking not. He was reviled by the time he left. He was also a pretty terrible mayor. I remember a lot about him. He was mayor all throughout my time in college. It was bad. Number nine is Walter Johnson's relative.
I was thinking that too. When I said, is Walter Johnson still alive? I was like, well, maybe he's got like a great grandson or something.
And then we've got Frank Robinson's relative. Frank Robinson, who did the commencement speech for the Columbia College of Arts and Sciences at GW on my graduation. At the time, I did not care.
Mm.
He was real boring. Rest in peace, Frank Robinson.
Well, I don't know if there's a good answer to the question who will throw out the first pitch. So
we're sorry. The wild card, whoever this person throws out, which is JP Finlay, the wild card is Tony Kornheiser.
Yeah, I can, honestly, that feels realistic. Mm-hmm. Feels like they could get that. Well, as the Nationals sort that problem out, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about the 2009 Phillies right after this. Well, at a much more interesting time 10 years ago when we were much more invested in the National League Championship Series, and it was, you know, still going on, the Phillies took on the, I believe, favored Dodgers. They were at least favored the previous year when the Phillies beat them. In 2009, I don't know if the Phillies winning the World Series had done a whole lot for people's confidence, but I know it wasn't assumed that it would be a walk in the park, even though the Phillies typically had the Dodgers number. But this was more of the Phillies solidifying their legacy of having the Dodgers number and of having Jonathan Broxton's number. Yeah, that was massively satisfying in that regard. Before we even started the series, Liz, shocking news out of Los Angeles for the city of Philadelphia. Kobe Bryant was asked, is this going to be a tough NLCS for you? You got to choose between, you know, your hometown Phillies or your new town, you know, LA Lakers or LA Dodgers. Like, obviously you're going to be associated with LA. You got to make a choice here. Like, oh, this is going to be tough for you. Mm-hmm. Oh man. And he says, no, it's not a problem at all. I actually grew up a Mets fan.
There are so many reasons to fucking hate Kobe Bryant. There are a lot. He's one of those dudes whose names click a lot when I write about him on Yahoo. If you ever see an article about him by me, please know, I hate it. I hate writing it. And when I write it, I'm just saying, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You are a rapist, fuck you.
Man is a skunk-brained trash.
Alleged, I'm sorry, I have to say alleged because he was never convicted, whatever. God, I hate
but
him
still,
so much.
For this story is just one of the many, like, in this brand
of... I grew up a Mets fan. Fuck you.
This brand of dipshit Kobe stuff is just an example of yeah, that kind of... Like, oh, no, it's no problem. I grew up in Philadelphia, but I was a Mets fan. Man, you suck. you suck for a lot of real reasons. Other stuff like this makes it even easier to just be like, yeah, you just suck, Kobe Bryant.
Yep, in every possible way.
Yes.
Like, the way to make everybody angry there is to pick the Mets. Wow.
Nice job, man. Really great stuff. Yeah, no side of that is going to look at you like, oh, yeah, this is great. Yeah, no. And, well, you know, the series started in Los Angeles, so we didn't really get the Philly fan reaction until later in the series. So I guess we'll hold off till we're talking about that in a minute. But Phillies took game one, 8-6. They gave up early. Cole Hamels obviously came out. Well, not obviously. Cole Hamels wasn't the Phillies' best pitcher at this point. But he came out, and this is a testament to how long this man has been pitching. But it was Cole Hamels versus Clayton Kershaw in game one of the NLCS. They're both still pitching. And Raul Ibanez, who played a key role in this game, is up for a managerial position. Brad Lidge, who got the save in this game, is now doing, I mean, he does some analyst work somewhere, right?
Yeah, occasionally. I think he does some serious XM radio work now more regularly. Yeah. Come back to Philly, Brad. We love you.
We love
Brad. I'm sure if he's listening, please, please replace Ben Davis in the broadcast booth. I'm begging you.
You are a decent person, and that makes you better than so many people.
I think after he left baseball, he went back to school. He was very interested. I remember reading a Sports Illustrated article. He was very interested in religious archaeology, like not in religion, but in religious archaeology. I'm like, wow, what a fascinating guy.
Brad Lidge, going to be Indiana Jones. Love it.
Oh, God.
Love that. Love that on him.
Oh, this is fan fiction. that I was born to write. Brad Lidge recruits his old Phillies teammates to go on an artifact rescue mission.
It belongs in a museum. That was my best Brad Lidge doing an Indiana Jones.
Like it's a normal, as close as literally anybody would get.
A normal guy voice, yeah. The big story in the 2009 NLCS wasn't really the teams playing in it, but it was really just Manny Ramirez. This was the height of Manny Wood. Everybody loved Manny, which is to say loved or absolutely despised Manny. The story about all the Red Sox in the World Series using steroids had come out, so that was a reason. That was enough for people to absolutely hate him. But Manny being Manny had already become a huge cliche, and the Dodgers had picked him up, put that Manny Wood sign in their outfield, and we were just off to the races. Manny was the headline, as he literally later in this series would be a headline that wasn't supposed to be a headline, but we'll get to that in a minute. But in game one, yeah, Cole Hamels comes out, gives up an early home run to James Loney. Phils go down 1-0, but then they have a big, big five-run fifth in which Ryan Howard legs out a triple. It was just a double. Sorry, he had a triple later in the series, I believe. Sorry. I'm getting excited.
I'm gonna have to look up that triple because Ryan Howard hit the triple. Sounds hilarious.
Sounds made up.
It does. Yeah,
frankly. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was. But Ryan Howard hit a two run double. Carlos Ruiz hit a 3-run home run. I mean, I feel like that home run doesn't. I can't visualize that in my head. Mm-mm. So I feel like we don't talk about that home run enough. But in game one, yeah, the highlights typically don't, I think, live on as immortally because they didn't like win the series. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, just the beginnings. But Chooch hit a 3-run bomb. Ryan Howard hit a 2-run double, giving the Phillies a 5-1 lead. Then the Dodgers come right back in the fifth and score 3 runs. It was a Chase Utley throwing error that keyed the rally.
What?
Yeah, just disgusting.
This must
followed
be made
by
up.
This is why he's so hated in Philadelphia. It was almost immediately followed by a Manny Ramirez 2-run shot. So that got the people going in L.A. As many of them, you know, were there. All, you know, the 12 of them that had showed up by this point. It was the fifth inning. then Raul Ibanez hits a 3-run home run off George Sherrill. After he had allowed 2 leadoff walks, which, all right, man. So the Phillies go back up, and then the Dodgers again come back and score 2 more runs. So it's an 8-6 game going into the 9th inning. Needed Ryan Madsen and Brad Lidge to come on and not allow a squeak, but they managed to. Ryan Madsen, he was lights out at this point. He didn't allow any trouble. Brad Lidge, of course, allowed 2 base runners to reach, but finally managed to retire the Dodgers, and the Phillies took game one in L.A., which is like, you know, you win game one on the road, you can usually be pretty confident. All right, we got this. The series is over. You know, we took one of the road games. We should be able to handle this team in our own park. So no matter what happens tomorrow night, we should be able to take the series. I don't know. I mean, do you feel like a series is over after game one in that circumstance?
I think sometimes at least it gives you some confidence, makes you feel like, all right, we got this. You know, we can, when we go home, we won't be embarrassed.
Right.
You know, we won't be embarrassed. We won't have embarrassed the team. We will still have a chance to win when we get home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think the series is over, but I think it's, you know, it's the best way to start. If you win game one on the road, like, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Chooch said, he told the papers, I know I will remember this night for the rest of my life, which is it's very, you know, obviously very endearing, but also kind of funny that I'm like, I don't remember this home run at all. But he obviously played a key role. But also playing a key role was that same inning. Clayton Kershaw threw 3 wild pitches, an NLCS single inning record, according to the Inquirer.
He was building that postseason narrative from the very beginning, wasn't he?
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
Poor guy.
Poor Clayton. Chooch came up again in the 8th inning. There was one Phillies fan in one of the lower sections surrounded by all these Dodgers fans wearing blue. And he's just standing up yelling,
Chooch! Oh, my God. I love it. That's always one of my favorite images. Like last night during the Astros-Yankees game, there was this one... And man, Astros fans I know some individually nice Astros fans, but as a group, they are aggressive and aggro. They're just aggro all over the place. But this one guy wearing his bright orange Astros thing was just so distressed every time. He was just like holding his head and like his arms were coming out. It's just like, why? Why? And then he was so happy when they went ahead. I was just like, all right. Like that, I kind of love that image. Like in this sea of hostility, it's just like, yes.
Mm-hmm. I am the guy. I'm for us, you know? Yeah.
Camera,
we got some representation out there. Oh yeah. Yeah. Born for it. Liz, this was also around the time of, we're going to real quick step away from baseball. This was the Balloon Boy situation.
Oh my God.
Liz, Balloon I need to ask Boy. You, I need to ask you a question. What is this? I have never fully understood what it is that Balloon Boy was. I came into that story late and have never completely filled out exactly what the hell this,
really?
This story was. Yeah.
I keep forgetting. I'm older than you. I remember Balloon Boy. It was before Twitter was a thing. I mean, Twitter was around and people were tweeting about it. Because I saw those tweets going around. It was after I joined. And so I remember seeing tweets about it. But it was one of the first viral news events I remember happening that social media and 24-hour news ran with in a way that I had never seen before. Like, it felt like, it all felt like it was the first time something was happening, and now this was going to happen all the time now, and I was right. It is happening all the time now. But yeah, it was just some kid. I mean, some parents who wanted fame. Like, we were in this place in history where reality shows were still really huge, and people were looking for a way to get famous, and so they just sent up a balloon with no one in it and said, our boy is in there.
How do you hatch that scheme?
I.
What a weird idea.
I don't know. Like it's so specific, right? Like, I think they must have been a family that did this, that did the balloon thing. They must have been. Otherwise, I don't know why that's what you would think about.
Yeah.
You know, my child is taking the car and is driving across the country.
Like, yeah, I guess you can't, like, put a stick against the gas pedal and send a car on its way and assume, like, you know, oh, this will keep going long enough to be a news story. And we can claim there's a child in there and it'll be like, you know, it'll catch on. A balloon kind of has a slower path and feels like weirdly safer. But at the same time, if there was a real kid in there, he would have been dead. Right? Like, there's no way that a balloon floating away, you can't control a hot air balloon. I guess that's why it was a huge story. Everyone was like, look at this child who's clearly doomed. Let's tune in.
I mean, I think the assumption was that this is a family that did the balloon, that did ballooning, and he might have known how to handle it. Maybe. I don't know. Like, it's really, it was bizarre. And the fact that people just sort of believed it immediately is very much like today. They believed it immediately without thinking too much about it. You know, of course, if this happened today, Twitter would be on it immediately, like researching deeply this family's presence on social media and all that stuff. That was not around. And so it was like a good couple of hours, I think, where everyone was like, this boy is America and we must save him.
This boy is America. That is the goal of every news story like that now. It's a battle for the soul of America in a hot air balloon.
And it ended up just being a cautionary tale about, you know, it was reality TV, because I think they probably hoped to get a reality show out of it to bring attention to their amateur ballooning.
Nice.
And this was before the word viral was really applied, I think, to that type of stuff. But it really was like the first, one of these first viral news stories, and ended up being a hoax. It was one of the most truly bizarre things. it was just this weird artifact that no one thinks about until we hit like this 10 years. It's only been a decade.
Wow.
Like, I can't, thinking it's, about it's a, how different I was, my life was, the world was then, it's just like this happened in another America.
This is why we do this, you know, to think about these simultaneously vast yet small amount of time that 10 years can feel like, depending on what we're talking about. And to convince people to, I don't know, you look back and consider how much you've changed and what about you has died in the last decade.
Oh, so it's much, really.
It's a fun podcast. I only host fun podcasts. So game two of the 2009
NLCS. Let's talk about how much the Phillies sucked in 1913. Let's do it.
Game two of the 2009 NLCS. Played it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in L.A. Whatever.
Oh, God.
This was the one game the Phillies lost. So the Dodgers managed to salvage one of the games. It was a 2-1 thriller. Chan Ho Park lost it for the Phillies. It was a pitching duel between Vicente Padilla and Pedro Martinez. Not what you would have pegged as the matchup for game two of the NLCS in spring training that year, but yeah, they were not like I said, they were not on each other's opening day rosters of the two teams they were now representing. The Phillies' only run came on a Ryan Howard solo shot. The Dodgers managed to score two in the eighth after the Phillies had a 1-0 lead since the fourth inning, and Chase Utley committed another throwing error, another one. He blew it. Russell Martin hit a ground ball to him for a double play, and he got the on the relay throw. Nope, just threw it away. You know, he'd had three errors all season long, and he's blown it for the Phillies in game two of the NLCS. Unbelievable.
The playoffs will do that too.
Come on, man. And Jonathan Broxton closed the game, gets the save for the Dodgers. Ah, come on, man.
We'll get him again.
Chase, you blew it. Oh, you blew it. And it made people wonder. You know, Camden Courier Post wrote, you have to wonder, is it in Chase Utley's head? Does he all of a sudden have a case of the yips like former Dodgers second baseman Steve Sachs, who had trouble making even the most routine of throws? And then they said, you know, the answer is no.
The answer is obviously no. I mean, I like that. I mean, it's a sign of how much the city loves and respects Chase Utley that everyone's like, Chase, are you okay?
And then they were like, don't ask him if he's okay. Like, he's going to get mad.
Do you need some tea? Can I help you with something? Like, do you need me to run an errand? Like, do you need some time? Like, I feel like if it was almost anyone else, they would have immediately been, I mean, it was just the second game, but they would have immediately been thrown under the bus. You know, once the bus came away, Phillies fans would have set upon them with, like, sticks and beaten them to death.
Get him! Ah!
Like, yeah. Anyone else, anyone. I don't care. Yeah. Race does not matter. I think anyone but Chase Utley would have been totally just roasted.
Liz, how do you feel about gut decisions in baseball?
This feels like a complicated question.
Oh no, it's not.
I feel like they should be employed with discretion.
Terrible answer. Mm-hmm. Wrong. Canceled.
Since our next manager is probably going to be Buck Showalter, that is a terrible answer, Liz.
No, it was gut, whatever you refer to when you say gut decisions were under the microscope after game two. Not only was Joe Torre criticized for leaving Clayton Kershaw in game one after throwing three wild pitches and giving up that home run. He was only 21 at that time.
Oh, my God, baby.
Yeah. Charlie Manuel was a little criticized for taking Pedro Martinez out of this game. He threw 7 shutout innings on only 87 pitches. Woo! He was looking good. And Charlie took him out of the game.
I would have been angry. Yeah. I probably was angry if I remember.
He said he was spent. You know, the goal was for him to only throw 75 to 90 pitches. He hit 87.
because he had still just barely joined the team, still learning everyone's names.
Don't forget, he was 47 years old and hadn't been pitching all season.
Swine flu, I think. We'll probably get to that.
And they all had swine flu.
I don't know
flu.
If it was here, if it was World Series. We can look back. But yeah, like there was something going around.
I mean, if they had it in the World Series, it had to have been like the beginning stages have to have occurred around this time. Yeah, they all had they were all sweating the swine flu close to this point in the season. So Charlie Manuel used his gut. He said he talks to Rich Doobie about all his pitching decisions. Obviously, we all know this. Mm-hmm. He pretty much turned to his pitching coach multiple occasions to be like, "What do you do? What is pitching?"
And the
pitching
coach just like, no again. Hitting. What do the ball throwers do?
Which isn't, that's not a slight or an insult against Charlie Manuel at all. It's just the reality of the situation. He really relied on his pitching coach to make a lot of the pitching decisions because he is probably one of the top three, if not the number one hitting expert on planet Earth. Gut decision kind of came under the microscope a little bit, especially since the Phillies lost. Didn't really play in the Phillies' favor in this game, but you know, they lose 2-1. Doesn't really matter. Got to head back to Philadelphia with the series tied, and everybody's, you know, I think willing to compromise that they won a game on the road, and now they were back in Philadelphia where it was safe and they could easily finish the series off, which they did. And we'll get to exactly how they did so right after this break. Game three of the 2009 NLCS. The city was alive with fervor. NLDS had already been a pregame, basically, to this series. Phillies had faced the Dodgers in the 2008 NLCS as well. People were anxious to see a repeat of that. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember the city of Philadelphia during a deep playoff run, Liz, and for baseball. But, yeah, there was basically nowhere you could go and not talk about this game or hear about this game. Or there was a point where I was riding my bike down, you know, I don't know if it was maybe like 3rd Street, 4th Street, one of those early numbered streets. And I stopped at a red light, and a taxi driver to my left asked me what the score was, and I didn't know. So I turned to my right and yelled to a guy inside of a bar with a window open to get the score. He yelled it back to me. I yelled it to the cab driver. And that was just a nice little moment of the Philadelphia sports ecosystem functioning at its highest level that I like to think about. So yeah, yes, that was very nice. So yeah, October 18th, 2009, Phillies and Dodgers in prime time, putting their new ace Cliff Lee on the mound against Hiroki Kuroda. You know, I looked it up because I was like, oh, we got to talk about this, but forgot that the Shane Victorino Hiroki Kuroda situation, that was 2008. Yep. That didn't even happen.
Mm-hmm. That was 2008, so. Where he was like, don't throw up my head, throw up my hip.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, throw up me. I can remember. I mean, we're talking about 2008 now for just a moment, but I'll never forget what Shane Victorino looked like. In those moments, like that, you know, little maybe 4 seconds, 3 seconds of him pointing at his head and his hip and mouthing those words, probably with the word fuck in there a couple of times. I will always remember that. That would probably be my tiny mental clip of Shane Victorino. It weirdly embodies him very much.
It does. Yes. Yeah. Like, he seems like a big backyard wrestling fan.
Follow
just
him
gives
on
off
Instagram,
that
and I think you'll see this is true.
Well, Game 3 is the game that features the Ryan Howard triple that I mentioned before.
Swing and line drive into the right field corner. Victorino scores. Utley around third. He's going to score. Howard's going for three. The throw to third. Not in time. It's a triple for Ryan Howard.
As the Daily News put it, and this is a great summation of this team, they wrote, for all the perceived faults of this Phillies team, including a patchwork bullpen and the occasional system-wide offensive shutdown, both of which were on display in their 2-1 loss in Game 2, the one thing they rarely miss is a scent for blood. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what happened in this game. They jumped out on Kuroda immediately. Yes. They scored 4 runs in the first, 2 runs in the second. The first RBIs of the night came from the Ryan Howard triple. Jason Wirth hit a 2-run home run into the forestry of the Phillies stadium that made it 4-0.
Fly ball hammered center field. Kept going back. That ball is long gone.
Carlos Ruiz came in the second inning, led off with a double. Jimmy Rollins hit a double. And at that point, Kuroda came out of the game. Chad Billingsley came in. Forgot about Chad Billingsley.
Oh, man.
Yeah. They scored twice more on him. Raul Ibanez and Pedro Feliz. Feliz hit a triple. The Phillies were tripling like crazy in this game. So, this was a big game for the Phillies. This was I don't want to say a statement game, but like the statement was, you suck and we're going to beat you because they beat the Dodgers 11-0 and held the Dodgers to 3 hits over 9 innings. So, yeah, Shane Victorino also hit a home run in this game. So the Phillies absolutely clobber the Dodgers in Game 3, set this city on fire. And when the Phillies are looking that good and you can be that confident in the offense and that they were going to win, that obviously ups, you know, the other spinning plate in a Phillies fan situation, which is antagonizing the opposition, which we definitely did in big ways. So when I said we went out of our way, I mean, not only was obviously Manny Ramirez taking a lot of the shit, he plays in the outfield, he's close to the fans, people are going to scream at him. They didn't even need the steroid thing to scream at him. He's the lightning rod of baseball at this point, very much so. But they're screaming at him, you took steroids, and cheater, which was, you know, I gotta say, no matter what your opinion is on steroids, I was at the first one of the Phillies games where Barry Bonds had become the lightning rod of baseball in regards to steroids, and it was such a carnival atmosphere. People were dressed up. up, and like everyone was like, "Who cares about the game? We're here to scream at Barry Bonds." People were dressed up in giant Juicy Juice box drinks.
Oh my god!
Like dressed up as giant needles. I mean, like it was like a school play. It was amazing. So when you can all unite around the same like narrative to use in your insults, it's a great feeling.
It's like whenever Ryan Braun comes to town, still. He still gets a booze from the Phillies fans. And I firmly believe it's not because he's been a notorious Philly killer over his career. I feel like the booze started after the steroid stuff. I remember the first time he came back after the steroid crap, the Phillies booed him almost nonstop. Phillies fans booed him nonstop for the entire game.
Right. As if everybody in that Philly stadium, like half the people in that Philly stadium aren't like on pills now. As they're booing him. Yeah. Like, and in Ramirez's case, he had tested positive for a female fertility drug. He apparently had said that it was a prescription for a real medical problem. So, you know, that's where this trouble had started. He struck out in this game, but the press wanted him. They played him up huge in like a big way in this series. Obviously Phillies fans latched onto that, but not only was Manny the target of their ear, but basically they had to look into, okay, who you talked about booing Scott Rolen. They had to like do some quick research to be like, who's on the Dodgers that used to play here that we can yell at? Randy Wolf was on the Dodgers, but that was obviously, you know, he got booed lustily just for being on the Phillies before, which why? But also there was like a loving kind of like the Wolf, I think like the Wolfpack had a presence at this game.
I'm just sure. Kind of like,
they weren't wearing Dodgers jerseys, but they were kind of like a nice salute to Randy Wolf, because that was, when you talk about the famous fan groups of that era, that was probably the main one. Yeah, that was. Yeah.
I feel like when you boo Randy Wolf for coming back and being part of the Dodgers, like I would hope he feels the respect from that, because he's a former Philly, a former longtime Philly who was on the team during a particularly bleak time. I would hope that he felt the respect, because I would hope that the boos were sent in respect.
Yes. I mean, they definitely should have been. And that's what's interesting about this is they also booed Vicente Padilla. Okay. Obviously, he had played for the Phillies. And according to the News Journal from Wilmington, Delaware, the loudest boos of the night were for Wolf, Vicente Padilla, and Jim Thome, who was on the Dodgers.
Oh, God.
And got booed by Phillies fans, which no one ever apparently talks about the time Jim Thome got booed by Phillies fans.
No. I'm not surprised, and yet I am. This this was before he came back.
Right. But, I mean, and again, this is the playoffs.
Yeah, it's
nobody
the playoffs.
Gets a pass.
So no one gets a pass. And I think Thome would understand. I mean, Thome's the nicest man in baseball, so.
This is a booing where I'm sure like they all got except for Padilla, who it's like there's just nothing happening in there. But like this is a booing that gets you a chuckle, I think, from the target of it. But this is all from a story about, you know, this was always going to happen, measuring Phillies fandom versus Dodger fandom. And, you know, obviously the differences there. And there, you know, somebody was holding a sign at game three that said, "Yo, this ain't Hollywood," which is like
the
only one they could probably put in the newspaper because it was like G-rated. But but yeah, you know, they talked to a lot of fans who are just
the X-rated signs now, like the
oh my god, yeah, like that. A lot of photos you couldn't use as a product of this game.
Stick this in your ass, Manny.
Yeah. So. Yeah, this newspaper, the News Journal, they did a story on Phillies fans, and they talked to Phillies fans about Phillies fandom, and it was hilarious. The usable quotes were just exactly what you expect.
Usable
like, oh, we're diehards, we're passionate, blah blah blah, we're dedicated, blah blah blah. You know, we're loyal. They got a 79-year-old man to say Phillies fans are very loyal. They've had a good team the last couple of years, and players appreciate the fans. Which, you know,
thanks,
whatever.
Grandpa.
It is what it is. It's just, you know, yeah, you had to mention
you
it.
You can't.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm against comparing fan bases like that, because the city of Philadelphia is so different than the city of Los Angeles. It's It's like they're on two different planets, honestly, and at least from the attitude of the people who live there, because what defines Philadelphia, whether you like it or not, is a deep sense of inferiority.
Yes.
Los Angeles does not have that.
At the heart of basically everything we do is that inferiority complex, insecurity. Absolutely.
Telling people to fuck you before they even say anything.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that no is important. You're right. Because it's like it's a comeback to an insult nobody had. Yes. Nobody said.
Just the eternal insult of being a Philadelphia resident, a Philadelphian. Like you just right. go out into the world and go, no, you fuck off.
Sitting quietly next to someone from Philadelphia who suddenly screams, no, you shut up. Yeah, I was actually interviewing a woman for a different, unrelated story, and she mentioned she went to Penn, and I was like, oh, Penn, I lived in Philadelphia for 10 years, and I realized in my head as I was saying that, I've already said that I'm from Philadelphia twice during this interview. I'm like, sorry, I can't stop telling you I'm from Philadelphia, and she's like, yeah, that's a pretty Philadelphia
yeah,
thing.
It's we're very insecure.
So anyway, Phillies clobber the Dodgers in game three, first game in Philadelphia, the 2009 NLCS, 11-0. Game four is the game with the much, much more memorable ending. Mm-hmm. The Phillies jump ahead again very early, 2-0. Ryan Howard, huge, huge bat in this series. It's a 2-run home run off Randy Wolf.
Driven deep right field, and he didn't miss again. Line drive homer for Howard.
And in doing so, he tied Lou Gehrig for the most consecutive postseason games with a run knocked in. The last eight postseason games he played in, he knocked in a run. So he was a huge, huge presence in this postseason leading up to the World Series. Not as much in the World Series, but leading up to the World Series, he definitely was very, very present. Dodgers tied it in the fourth. Joe Blanton was pitching for the Phillies. He got tinged a little bit by James Loney and Russell Martin. Matt Kemp hit a solo shot. Dodgers pull ahead 4-2 in the sixth. Phillies make it 4-3 in the bottom of the inning. And then it comes down to the bottom of the ninth, which we all remember. Like, I was at this game. This is probably the most memorable ending to a Phillies games I ever witnessed in person. So in the bottom of the ninth, Jonathan Braxton comes in. The Dodgers wanted him to get 4-out save. He walks Matt Stairs, and then he hits Carlos Ruiz with a pitch. And at that point, you're like, all right, he's in his own head right now. Greg Dobbs crushes this line drive that manages to be caught at third base, and that brings Jimmy Rollins to the plate. So runners on first and second, 2 outs, and I mean, you know, this is. We've gone through a series of Phillies baseball where by this point the game is over. There's 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth and the Phillies are losing. The game's over. You know, it's not technically not over. And if you want to be like, the game's not over, fine. This is what happened next is exactly why people say that. But now we are looking at a Phillies team that for whom this doesn't happen. But at this point, you know, you're still there. You're still in the stadium. You're still standing in the cold because you know there's a more
chance
than a small possibility that Jimmy's going to do exactly what he did. And
we've seen it happen.
He works, the count gets to 1-1, and he hits a line drive, splits the gap, goes all the way to the wall. They pinch running for Matt Stairs. I was like, Matt Stairs comes around. I'm like, wait,
no, that's not
right.
Right now.
Yeah. Eric Bruntlett was pinch running for Matt Stairs. They both come around to score. Chooch, he's scoring from first base, and he comes around third base, slides into home, jumps up in the air. You know, he basically bounces off the ground, and they run out and just swarm Jimmy Rollins. Scott Fransky's call of this game is legendary.
I listened to it right before this. Watching the whole thing with his call and like, they really are just swarming. It's like this amorphous blob of Phillies just like running towards who is responsible. Let's find them.
Yep.
I actually teared up. I'm just like, this is one of my favorite moments in
Getting
Phillies playoff
up.
History.
Swing and a drive right center field. This one is falling. It's a base hit. It'll go up the alley. Bruntlett will score. Ruiz around third. He is being waved home. The Phillies have won the ball game. Ruiz slides. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout.
Yeah.
Rollins ball near third. This game is over as the Phillies strike again with 2 outs in the ninth inning. And they have a 3-1 lead.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, it has to be. It's such a great the good guys won moment. And they're clustering on the field. The Fanatics running around waving the 2009
going insane.
Play. I mean, it's such a great at this point, it made even better by the fact that I forget if it was MLB.com or ESPN. I think it was ESPN. Ran a gamer for this story accidentally before this happened. crediting Manny Ramirez with winning the game for the Dodgers because he had made this this shoestring catch in a key moment. And they were like, oh, he makes a great catch and the Dodgers win game three. And they posted it. They ran on their site and they had to take it back. Oh, crap. They had to take it back down because the Phillies walked it off with a 5-4 win. And it was also later came out Manny Ramirez was already in the clubhouse by the time the Phillies had won. He was in the showers and like people shocking. Made such a big deal out of this. And Casey Blake of the Dodgers at this point was like, I mean, he does that all the time. Like, he goes in there and he takes a shower. He's like, I think he assumed we were going to win the game, blah blah blah, you know. And he just goes in there and he starts taking a shower. I mean, he's like, it's not a big deal. I don't know, he genuinely thought it wasn't a big deal, but that's how he was characterizing it about his team. I mean, in the NLCS
he was 37. He's essentially late career Griffey napping in the clubhouse, so
right.
What do people want?
But you, as you can imagine, people ran.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So if you thought the taunts were just going to be about cheating and steroids, they were now also about showering, which people were yelling at Manny Ramirez in Game 5. Y'all take a shower, which is such a stupid. That's the stupid talk. You're really just saying, I pay attention to the news. Because when you're saying take a shower, first of all, that's not an insult. Second of all, he did take a shower. That's the whole point. Like, he didn't have to have your permission. He went and he was taking a shower because he chose to. Also, taking a shower, not a bad thing. Something people should do. Maybe they should do it more. I don't know. Just a thought. So Charlie
really
Manuel.
Really going out on a limb with these pronouncements.
Charlie Manuel was asked about pressure. He said, I just had a good feeling when Jimmy came up to bat in the bottom of the ninth. And he was asked about the pressure of the playoffs by Jim Salisbury in the Inquirer. And he has this great quote. Charlie Manuel, in 1998, he had a quadruple bypass after he'd had a heart attack. So he said in 2009, in regards to facing the pressure of Jimmy Rollins coming up with a chance to win the game in the bottom of the ninth, he said, pressure? Pressure is when the doctor takes your heart out and puts it on the table. This is a baseball game.
I love Charlie. I mean, Charlie Manuel, the only thing that saved me from disengaging from this season entirely. I'll admit. Mm-hmm. The only thing that saved me, I'm just like, Charlie's there. Maybe something good will happen. I can't mm-hmm. turn away from a Charlie team. How could you?
Charlie reminds you that moments like this are possible. Yes. He is the last connection to this era of Phillies teams, and bringing him back was a clear fan move by the Phillies.
It was a clear,
totally worked.
A clear indication that John Middleton is the one running the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That Klentak does not feel comfortable talking to Charlie Manuel. That is my guess.
Yeah, Phillies brought the Cadillac out of the garage for that mm-hmm. one. So, that win being secured, Jonathan Broxton's got to walk off with his head bowed.
Sorry.
At this point, Phillies have this series locked up. Even after the Dodgers jump ahead to a 1-0 lead in Game 1, Phillies come back in the bottom of the first, score 3 runs. Vicente Padilla getting the start for the Dodgers. Cole Hamels starting for the Phillies. But yeah, the Phillies went up 4-2 by the end of the second inning. George Sherrill at one point hit Shane Victorino with a pitch with the bases loaded. I mean, you know, this was not a pretty game. Phillies wind up winning Game 5, 10-4. And I mean, you know, Brad Lidge sealed the win with a clean bottom of the top of the ninth inning. This doesn't get talked about as much because, hey, it's a 10-4 win. Phillies pretty decidedly beat the Dodgers in this game, and also because Game 4 had the much more memorable ending. But this was the game the Phillies actually won the pennant.
High fly ball, Victorino is there, and the Phillies are National League champions again.
And they did. They won the pennant, and they were going back to the World Series thanks to, everything we just said, thanks to every factor that played a role in this. Let's say thanks to Charlie Manuel. Let's say he's our main character. So that was the the 2009 World Series, and they got to go and face, unlike in 2008, where we wonder what would have happened if they'd faced the Red Sox, 2009, they were pretty much facing who they were supposed to face from the American League. And unfortunately, we'll talk about that in our next episode. But that is the story of the 2009 NLCS. A lot of wonderful memories. It's a good time to reflect on it, too, with the grim reality of the 2019 playoffs staring us in the face. So, Liz, any final thoughts on the 2009 NLCS?
I am going to watch and listen to that Scott Fransky call probably another 15 times this weekend.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor and look it up and watch it. And yes, remember how awesome that felt. Because, you know, a postseason walk-off is something that rarely happens. We saw it happen once this current playoff season. But it's you know, remembering these feelings feels sad, right? Sometimes, but most of the time, I love it. Because this all actually happened. We all experienced it. And it was really cool.
It wasn't a dream. Yeah. Well, we'll get back there someday. You gotta believe it. Just because you remember how good this felt, and we'll feel that way again. And hopefully we'll get to share it with new fans at that point too. So that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hitting Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We got a new NLCS-themed episode of that about the 1976 Phillies losing Game 3 of the NLCS, which is just absolute delight. If you've ever seen the media turn against a team, we definitely had that in Philadelphia at the end of the 1976 NLCS, and that was a lot of fun to talk about.
Cannot wait.
And, of course, this podcast, Continued Success. We'll be talking about the 2009 World Series in our next episode, so that'll be a banger as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.